On Monday night, 22nd of May at 7 p.m, I'm going to be running a brand new webinar talking about HMOs. Yep, it is my topic, as you well know. But I'm going to be looking at the changes in the marketplace, understanding whether it's worth you investing in HMOs. I'm going to be looking at some of the changes that we're seeing happening and what might happen to HMOs over the next few years. Some of the things that are going on in the market that maybe you're not so aware of, but I believe could actually serve us if we're investing in HMOs. So I want to reveal what my research is telling me and what I think you as an educated investor may also want to know. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. All you need to do is register. There is no cost to attending on Monday night at 7 p.m. I'd love to have you with me. I'd love to have questions. I'd love to have a good, lively discussion. But most of all, I want you to come along and hear why I think that HMOs still have a very important part to play in the landscape of private rental housing in the UK and why I believe that. If you'd like to join me on Monday night, 22nd of May at 7 p.m, I'd love you to be there.
Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whittaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you.
Hello, welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. In this week's episode, I want to do a bit of a rundown of the Renters Reform Bill, which has just been published by the government this week, and particularly to analyse it from the light of HMOs. What impact is this going to actually have on your business? What difference is it going to make if you're investing in HMOs? How is this going to affect you? The first thing to mention about this bill is, of course, it's been on the kind of cards for at least 4 years. This was in the 2019 Conservative Manifesto, along with the Levelling Up Bill, neither of which have actually got through the legislative process yet. So although I was always very cynical that it would make it this far, and it has, I'm still slightly cynical that it's going to get through before we have our next general election. That's kind of my hope, if I'm honest with you. Having said that, reading the tea leaves, it looks like Labour are very steadily in the lead, and we might have a Labour government at the next general election, and they may take this bill even further. Anyway, I'm not going to get into politics on the podcast. This is not the place for politics. But it is really the place to question some of what we see the Conservative government doing right now with regard to the private rental sector. I'm sure, like me, you have been perturbed and disturbed by what you've seen, heard, read over the last 10 years. If you've been investing like me for more than 10 years, you will possibly remember the landscape as it was when, after the great financial crisis of 2008, we came out of that. And although there was a sense in which we were still in recession and things were still tough, banks began to lend a bit. Lending became a little bit looser. Of course, we had very low interest rates, perhaps artificially low interest rates. But there was an air in which you could find deals, people were willing to do property deals. The business of transacting on a property, buying, conveyancing, was not brilliant. It wasn't as easy as it had been 10 years prior to that, but it certainly wasn't as onerous as it is now. During lockdown, I thought conveyancing was slow because we were in lockdown. No, I was completely wrong about that. It was because of all the new regulations that had been introduced by the government. And even now, out of lockdown, a long time out of lockdown, it's still sometimes taking us 6 months before we complete on the purchase of a property. And if you're going through it, I feel for you because I know how painful that can be. You have to have the patience of a saint. But of course, what we have to remember is all these barriers that are put in place to restrict the ability of ordinary people to invest in property just creates a barrier for entry. And it makes those of us who are willing to jump through all those hoops, to get all our ducks in a row, to give all the paperwork that is required and the blood from our fingertips to make this conveyance and transaction work, you and I know that actually we can still make money out of property. So the background to the Renters Reform Bill, some would say, is another nail in the coffin for the private rental sector. Maybe that's true. I have to say, reading it made me feel very sad. First of all, if you go to the government website where you can download the bill, you need a stiff drink in your hand before you read it, because it is extremely technical. And most of it is amending the 1988 Housing Act, because a lot of the amendments that the government is wishing to bring in were first introduced in the 1988 Housing Act. So what you could do is print off a copy of the 1988 Housing Act. You could go to the bill, the Renters Reform Bill, and you could, with a highlighter pen, compare and contrast, like you did in O-level, I'm showing my age here, aren't I? GCSE, English. But I'm sure you've got far better things to do with your time. So I thought today what I would do is just take out some of the core elements of the Renters Reform Bill and share them with you and think about them in the context of HMOs. How is this bill going to affect you if you're investing in HMOs? The first thing I think it's worth pointing out is quite often government legislation aims for one particular outcome or a number of particular outcomes, but very often there are unintended consequences which they cannot foresee. The reason being is the people they consult for these bills are very often not investors. They're not people who are already involved in the private rental sector, who don't know it, who don't deal with it every day like their bread and butter. And what happens is that they then think they can change the law to make it better for one particular element of the population. I've got nothing against helping tenants, helping renters. I've got nothing against improving conditions for tenants or improving the marketplace for tenants. In fact, that is exactly what I think should happen. If we want to improve standards, we actually need to improve competition. I'm not sure this bill is going to achieve that. I think it might achieve other things that the government haven't yet foreseen. Hey ho, let's see who's right about that one. So what I'd like to do is run through the main changes, and there are a number of changes. So I'm not going to go through the detail of everything because it's just very, very long and boring. And you can go to the notes section and look yourself. In the notes to the podcast, I've uploaded a guidance paper that you can download and have a read through of it yourself, which gives a bit more easy to read guidance on the Renters Reform Bill. But let me warn you, this is a long piece of legislation because of the changes that are being introduced. So, you know, you really need to sit somewhere quiet with either a stiff drink or a nice hot cup of coffee in your hand and take a deep breath before you open it. So what are the main changes? Well, one of the changes that I'm sure you've already heard about is the difference of tenancies, the actual tenancy agreement that is being introduced. So currently at the moment, most people working in HMOs, running HMOs, investing in HMOs will be using an assured shorthold tenancy, an AST. And this is a standard tenancy that has now been used. It's almost like the yardstick of tenancies. Many local authorities insist on you using an HST, an AST, when you are getting your license for your HMO. Many banks will insist on you having ASTs in terms of your contract with your tenants when you're getting a mortgage. So there's lots of contractual items where the AST is written into that contract. And there's going to be a lot of work to do to remove the AST from those different contracts and those different agreements that you might have with various different people, possibly also including your insurance broker, your insurance company. So ASTs are going to be no longer the way in which you will have a tenancy agreement with your tenant. It's going to be a periodic tenancy. At the moment, if you have an AST and it sort of stops, it lapses after 6 months, it ends, generally then your tenant will move on to what's known as a periodic tenancy. And the aim behind that particular type of tenancy is that if they stay, they pay. That's kind of the agreement that, you know, if they pay their rent, you've got no problem with them staying there. Yes, if they get in arrears, you're going to have to take some action. But assuming they don't get into arrears, if you haven't issued another AST, then they will carry on a long-term periodic tenancy. And we've got loads of tenants on periodic tenancies because we don't tend to reissue an AST once they have been there for 6 months, unless they request it. If they want to, that's absolutely fine. But for the vast majority of tenants, we tend to say, look, if you've been there 6 months and you're happy staying and you want to stay, you pay and you can stay. And it also gives you flexibility, because if you want to move out of the property, you just give us 1 month's notice. And it's easy all way round. Now, because ASTs are going to be abolished and periodic tenancies are going to become the norm, this means that there are going to be different approaches to dealing with tenants who, for example, get into rent arrears. So Section 21, no-fault evictions, as they're so-called dubbed, are now going to also be abolished. So as well as the AST no longer existing, the Section 21 no-fault eviction is also going to be abolished. The benefit of Section 21 is it allows you to take back control of the property. Let's say, for example, you have got an elderly parent who's infirm and you don't want them to come and live with you, but you know that where they're living at the moment, which may be many hundreds of miles away, it's difficult for you to manage. You've got a rental property, perhaps just a 10 minutes drive away from where you live, and it would be perfect for your parent to go and live there. You speak to the mortgage company and ask them if it would be possible for you to put your elderly parent in there on a short-term basis, because potentially it might look like they'll go into a care home or whatever. But you make an agreement with the mortgage company. They agree to let you have your parent there temporarily or maybe move you onto a different mortgage product, but you sort all of that out. You can give the tenant who's currently there a Section 21 notice. And within 8 weeks, you really are looking to regain possession of the property. You've given the tenant the right level of notice. There's no fault. They've paid up their rent, very happy. You've given them an excellent reference. But it's because you need that home for your elderly parent. Well, I'm very sorry to say you won't be able to do that anymore. You'll have to give 6 months' notice to the tenant, a minimum of 6 months' notice to the tenant to regain possession of that property, if you wish to either live there yourself or you wish for a relative to live there. So it's a bit tough, isn't it? If you've got an elderly parent living on the South Coast, you're up in Cumbria and you want them to come and live with you so you can care for them and look after them and help them. Well, you're not going to be able to do that anymore. You're certainly not going to be able to use one of your rental properties to do it. And unfortunately, because lots of other landlords will be selling up as a result of the Renters Reform Bill, there won't be anywhere else to rent either. Okay, so that's the first light-hearted and jolly start to this podcast. As well as the abolishment of Section 21 and ASTs, there are changes to the length of notice period that tenants have to give you to move out. So currently, if they're on a periodic tenancy, they need to give you 1 month. Well, tenants will have to give 2 months' notice. But this could be from day two of their tenancy. So they could move in, and the very next day they could give you that 2 months' notice, and 2 months later they can move out. You might find you have an awful lot of 8-week tenancies. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about having changeovers every 8 weeks? I know I wouldn't be that happy about that. Now, many of our tenants start actually with a short-term tenancy. We've got a few tenants who are on 3-month agreements because their job prospects are such that they are nervous of committing to anything more than that. So they start on a 3-month tenancy and we kind of agree it, even though it's not perfect. It's not exactly what we would really prefer. But we agree it because what we know is very often if those tenants are happy and they're looked after, they will stay for a long time. And we've got the statistics to prove that. We've been tracking it over the last 3 years. So I know that once you get a tenant in a property that they're happy in and they're settled in, actually the initial length of tenancy that you give them doesn't necessarily determine how long they'll stay in the property. They may well stay much longer than you had initially thought that they would, or indeed they had initially thought that they would. But it still makes it feel a bit uncertain, doesn't it? It makes it feel very changeable. And one of the reasons why the government has apparently apparently started the ball rolling on the renters reform bill is because they state, Michael Gove has said this, that he wants more certainty. He wants better relationships between landlords and tenants. I'm just not sure that having this 8-week possible change around is going to do that. I think it's going to cause landlords to be much more suspicious, much more careful about who they rent to. They're going to probably want to take guarantors. They may want to charge much more, although I'll come on to that in a minute about rent levels. I think what's going to happen is that landlords are very quickly going to get savvy to this and realise that unless they're charging much higher rents, it might not be worth it for them to rent out the property if every 8 weeks they're going to have a new tenant. So these are some of the new changes that are coming in. Another area that is it's listed in great detail, and it's you could just tell some civil servant has had a sort of wild weekend writing this bill, because the grounds on which landlords can evict are much more determinable and much more evidentiary. In other words, you have to really prove that the grounds on which you want to evict a tenant are true. And in fact, if you claim a ground which later on proves not to be true, you can face prosecution. Can you believe it? So if you decide to give your tenant 6 months' notice that you want your elderly parent to come and move into that property from down south, you know, the one we talked about earlier, and yet 3 months after that tenant has moved out, your elderly parent then dies, and you then think, oh, well, I'll have to rent this out to another tenant, you can face prosecution. Because what the bill says is that you have to have a 3-month gap before you can re-advertise that property if you used the 6-month eviction notice to regain possession of your property. It's unbelievably harsh on landlords, and tenants are going to have a lot more of a right to reply, a lot more right to a voice, which in some ways is a good thing. We want to hear the tenant's voice, but I think that a lot of tenants will be saying, actually, this doesn't give them security. The renters reform bill is not actually going to help them. It's going to create massive insecurity, because what landlords generally want is long-term tenants. But this is not creating long-term tenants. This is creating short-term tenants. As well as that, deposits still need to be protected in the way that they are now. So can you imagine you've got a property, might be an HMO, 6 beds, all en suite. Let's hope it hasn't been rebranded individually for council tax. That's content for another webinar. But let's imagine that you have a 6-bed HMO and you've got 6 tenants living there. What you will not be able to do now is issue ASTs. So you issue your periodic tenancies and you perhaps take a damage deposit, as is your right to do so, which can be no more than 5 weeks worth of rent. So let's say you keep it at 4 weeks worth of rent, just to be on the safe side. That damage deposit now has to still be bonded in an appropriate scheme. And it could be that tomorrow that tenant who's moved in decides they don't really want to live there after all. They give you the notice and 8 weeks' time they're moving out. You have to then unbond the deposit, fill in all the paperwork and return the deposit to the tenant. The admin is pretty heavy, isn't it? Just for an 8-week stay. Are they using your HMO as an alternative to a hotel? Probably. And it makes me wonder whether you might decide it's actually not worth offering residential accommodation anymore. Perhaps serviced accommodation actually might be better. It's certainly a thought, isn't it? When I spoke about unintended consequences at the beginning of this podcast, that is one that I can see happening very, very strongly and clearly. It is, whispered. There are comments, there are nuances flying around the internet that Michael Gove is going to start to introduce regulation into the service accommodation sector as well. And, of course, there have already been rumours about introducing planning permission, statutory planning permission, if you wish to run serviced accommodation. Let's see if that happens. Now, another area which I think is very concerning, because as soon as the state starts to get too involved in any industry, generally they tend to lose control, paperwork and bureaucracy increases by the tenfold, and efficiency goes out the window. If you wish to increase your rent during the time that the tenant is living in one of your properties or in a room in your HMO, you can raise those rents once a year by filling in form section 13 notice. Yep, we've got more forms to learn, more terminology we have to learn, more numbers we have to understand. So a form section 13 is what it's going to be called, section 13 notice. You'll have to complete that. That will then go to the tenant. If the tenant disagrees or doesn't want to pay the new rent, they can go to a tribunal. And the tribunal, lovely places that they're going to become, will then be able to assess the rent level that you have put forward as the new rent. And if the tribunal think it's a bit too high, they can force it down. Yes, indeed, ladies and gents, we have rent controls by another name. And the worst thing is, this is going to be managed by a tribunal. Who's going to be sitting on these tribunals, I'd like to know? How are they going to get people to sit on the tribunals when 2.5 million people over 55 are currently out of work because of ill health? Or they have retired because of COVID. They don't want to work anymore. They want to travel the world. They want to enjoy the fruits of their labour. They perhaps want to sell up and invest in HMOs. Oh dear, is that such a good idea? Anyhow, if you've got nerves of steel, do it. I still very much believe in it because I think actually those of us who are educated and intelligent and can see our way through this awful mess that's going to happen, there's going to be massive demand. We had, you know, net migration is 700,000 at the moment from the last year. Where are all those people going to live? And this week you might have heard also that Suella Braverman is introducing emergency legislation to allow people who rent to asylum seekers, rent HMOs to asylum seekers, to allow them to be released from HMO legislation, including licensing and other health and safety checks. Now, admittedly, they have to be registered as an asylum seeking landlord. Not that they personally are asylum seeking, but you know that they're a landlord that houses asylum seekers, or they have to have a contract with a registered social provider that provides housing for asylum seekers. But isn't it interesting that on the one hand, we've got legislation, the Renters Reform Bill, that is come to the light of day, that we're looking at right now, which is really tightening the screws on the private rental sector. And HMOs are mentioned once or twice, but not very much in the Renters Reform Bill. But then we've also got legislation to try and free up elements of the housing market, particularly HMOs, because of the need, because of asylum seekers. It's a real dichotomy. And one is being introduced by the Home Office, that's the Suella Braverman one, and one is being introduced by the Department of Levelling Up. And it just feels to me that there's a real mismatch here in what the government strategy is doing. So rents, don't think that you can make a decision anymore about how far your rents can go up. It's now going to have to be a decision made by a third party. Now, some of the other headlines that you've probably heard about, pets will be allowed. You can't, the wording is that it will be not, you won't, as a landlord, you won't be able to discriminate against people who have pets. Pet insurance, increased pet insurance now will be made possible. That was actually banned with the Landlord Fees Act, when you weren't able to charge extra the cost of extra insurance against tenants who had pets. But that is going to be repealed, so you will be able to do that now. But in HMOs, pets don't work, do they? I think the furthest we've ever had with a pet in an HMO was somebody had a goldfish in a goldfish tank. And I kind of thought, yeah, well, it's not the end of the world, but I still wasn't terribly happy about it. But I just don't think pets in HMOs work unless you have perhaps a student HMO where they all know each other and they all take responsibility for the pet. But generally, pets in HMOs, I would say, particularly in professional HMOs, is a no-no. So how are we going to get around that one? We'll have to, I think, make some stab at probably telling our MP or the housing department, you know, you've got to have to make some You're going to have to make some exceptions because HMOs are just not suitable places for pets. I think that's really, really clear. The other thing that has been introduced is in terms of discrimination against people who have children. So you cannot have a blanket ban on children. No mention of HMOs. Well, as we know, in HMOs, there are rules and regulations about room sizes, depending on who's living in that room and how many people are living in that room. So if you've got an HMO and suddenly you're not allowed to discriminate or ban people who've got children, how's that going to work in an HMO? Again, this just has not been thought through, and there's very little reference in the bill to the implications of shared living or HMOs. Another thing that's going to be introduced is a property portal and an ombudsman, and all landlords will have to register themselves and all their properties on this database. So this is going to be a database of landlords, which is going to be available for tenants to be able to look through. They're going to look at your status. They're going to look at your ratings. It's probably going to be like Trustpilot, something like that. And, you know, it's going to be a landlord database that shows what properties you own, where they're located, and so on and so forth. Now, to me, again, the implementation of this is the question in my mind. It's great having these wonderful ideas, these databases, but look what happened to the COVID app, the track and trace app. Do you remember that? How successful that was. What a great innovative technological breakthrough we made during COVID with the test and trace app. And then what happened? Actually, it wasn't track and trace, was it? I think that's the Royal Mail. But it was test and trace. That was something very different. Test and trace. How successful was that? I think a few billions got poured down the plug hole with that particular app. So I'm not convinced that government, and I'm not making any differentiation here between any form of Conservative, Tory, Lib Dem, Labour, whoever you are in government, is able to do this kind of thing very, very well. But this is what they want. They want a property portal for your properties. Next thing is the decent home standard is going to be imposed. So if you have a house which the local authority deems needing to be improved because your kitchen or your bathroom or your general decor is not up to scratch, they can impose that under the decent home standards. And if you're concerned about that, I would recommend that you go and read what the decent home standard says. Mostly it's about health and safety. And if you've got a licensed HMO, your property is most likely to already meet the decent home standards. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't have got a license, but it is probably worth just checking that out, starting to think about what this might mean for you. There are some slight lights at the end of a very long tunnel. It's the Renters Reform Bill is promising a faster possession for antisocial behaviour. So if you have a tenant who is behaving very badly and you've got proof of antisocial behaviour, the ability to escalate that to court and get a possession order should be faster. We wait for that to be seen. The courts have a massive backlog at the moment, and there are huge waiting lists across the country for possession claims, as is. So again, my question would be, just like the tribunals, where are the people who are supposed to be sitting in these courts making the judgment and knowing enough about the law to be able to make a decision about whether the landlord or the tenant is correct and whether a possession order should be granted? I think there's a lot of lack of clarity at the moment in the Renters Reform Bill and in the guidance notes about how the courts will process Section 8s, because that's all that we'll be left with. We won't have Section 21s anymore, Section 8s, and the different grounds that are going to be developed under Section 8. There's lack of clarity about how those claims will be escalated and how they'll be dealt with at the court and how quickly you'll be able to get one of those working. And I think there's very big questions here about HMOs. There's questions here about student HMOs. Now, purpose-built student accommodation, PBSA, is exempt from the Renters Reform Bill. So if you've got a purpose-built student accommodation, they operate under slightly different rules and a different license. But if you're a landlord running a student HMO, again, let's say six rooms with en suites, this Renters Reform Bill applies to you, which means that you could have tenants moving in September, but by December, they've moved out. And what are you going to do then? And I know that the NRLA have started to raise some of these questions with government because they haven't been adequately answered yet. And if you have a student HMO, this will be a big question for you. How on earth do you make sure that you can maintain occupancy through the year if you find that students move out of your property early, which under the Renters Reform Bill, they will be able to do. Pets and children, obviously I've mentioned that already with regard to HMOs, they don't really mix, so I don't think that's going to work, and possibly there'll be an exemption for HMOs. I wonder what the consequences of this bill are going to be. I'd be interested to know what you think. What do you think is going to be the consequence? Do you think this is going to make landlords just throw them in the towel and decide not to carry on anymore? Will it cause more to go to serviced accommodation where, let's face it, at the moment, the rules are a little bit more flexible. And if you're going to get an 8-week stay, a minimum, let's say, 8-week stay from a tenant under the Renters Reform Bill, what would stop you from doing an 8-week stay under serviced accommodation, where you have much fewer and less onerous requirements to run your business? And of course, it's much more tax efficient as well. And it's much, much better from the point of view of personal tax. I'd be interested to know what you think. Personally, if you want to know my opinion, I think there is going to be a silver lining to this cloud. I felt quite sad when I read it because this really indicates a huge change in the private rental sector and potentially in HMOs as well. But I'm sad for tenants as well as landlords. I'm sad that we're getting rid of Section 21. I'm sad that we're getting rid of ASTs. Some of the other things I'm not so worried about, tweaks and changes. But I just feel that when you can't own something in this country that you can stake a claim to and say, yes, I've bought that thing, whether it's a car, a caravan or a property, with my hard-earned cash. And yeah, maybe some bank money as well. They're part of the partnership. But I've taken the risk. I've put myself out there and I'm offering good quality accommodation to my tenants. And the government now want to get involved in running my business. That is a very sad day for everybody concerned. And I think let's keep an eye on what happens to this over the next 18 months. I don't think it's the death of the private rental sector, but I certainly don't think it is a positive move if we're trying to encourage more people to provide more housing for the needs of the population, which we clearly have. However, I do think there are some silver linings. And in fact, I will be talking about the silver linings on Monday when I do my webinar. So if you'd like to know what I think are the positive sides to this and how you can still benefit, even despite all these changes that are going on, and how you can still make money out of investing in HMOs, then I'd love to see you on Monday night, 7 p.m. The link is in the podcast notes. It'd be great to have you there. That's my roundup of the Renters Reform Bill. I hope it's been useful. Please feel free to message me, email me, send me any questions that you have about it. And let's just see what happens over the next few weeks and months as it goes through the process of scrutiny. If you've got any thoughts about it, you might want to write to your MP. Get active. That's what I say. Get active. Get involved. Don't be passive because this is your business and it really matters.
Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.